Hello, everyone. This is episode 50 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. I'm your host, Gary Ng from iPhoneincanada.ca, and I'm here alongside Justin Louie. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
I'm really good. Episode 50, kind of a cool number, and it happens to fall in a keynote recap episode, which are always my favorite episodes to do, so that worked out nicely, and let's get to it.
All right. So once again, Apple did announce their brand new iPad on March 7th. And as with most Apple keynotes in the beginning, there is a recap of numbers. Here in the beginning, Tim Cook was on stage. He talked about how the post-PC revolution is in full effect. He said, quote, "The PC is no longer the center of your digital world. It's just another device." Apple told us that 76% of their revenue is from post-PC devices. They told us that, you know, they had a retail store update. They told us they had 110 million visitors last quarter, 325 million total iOS devices sold. And they also announced that iOS 5.1 was going to be released that same day. So that was just in the beginning.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting right off the bat that he made it clear that the PC was just another device, which you'll remember quite famously Steve Jobs said last year, even said it even more emphatic than that when he said the PC is being demoted to just another device. If you remember last week, we talked about how Tim Cook mentioned Steve Jobs at the beginning of the shareholders meeting. I kind of wondered if he would say anything at this event, and he didn't. So I think it's kind of clear that when they're facing like the consumers, they sort of don't want to keep mentioning it. But at the same time, as much as they didn't specifically mention Steve Jobs, he repeated Steve Jobs' mantra and kind of stayed with the same keynote format. It was right out of Steve Jobs' playbook. And the other thing that I noticed that struck me right off the bat is Tim Cook seemed much more comfortable out there. If you remember the iPhone 4 keynote, everybody was sort of wondering why everything seemed so down. Why Tim Cook, was he nervous? Then, of course, the next day we learned that obviously those guys were all pretty upset and dealing with a tough circumstance. I found this time right off the bat, he was much looser. If you really want to overparse it, he still had a collared shirt, but it was untucked. It just seemed much more looser and comfortable up there than he has in the past.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Right away, he did seem a lot more assertive and confident. Untucked t-shirt, you know, a little bit casual there, but at the same time, he was, you know, pretty strong with his words, talking about how much success Apple has experienced. He talked about how, you know, just so happened that, you know, hey, we just hit 25 billion apps downloaded out of the 585,000 apps available on the App Store. So that was pretty significant. He goes on to mention that there are now 100 million iCloud users. Goes on to talk about iTunes in the cloud now includes movies. Movies and TV shows are now in 1080p. Which moves us to the introduction of the new Apple TV.
Yeah, I was actually, they really kind of blew by that whole section, but I thought it was a pretty big deal that movies are now part of the iTunes in the cloud. As we've discussed on the show, and if people follow those things, the film industry is notoriously against these type of things. They seem dedicated to making you buy a film over and over again. They're paranoid about piracy, even though, as we've said over and over again, these things don't affect piracy, making it easier for your regular customers. So I was very impressed with that. I think it makes the Apple TV far more compelling. And as I mentioned to you before the show, it makes wanting to buy a movie a little more interesting, because I always found that when you went and bought a DVD, you were paying $20 for that DVD and you were getting some extra features. But you also felt like an ownership of that movie. You knew that as long as you held on to that physical disc, you own something. Whereas with digital goods, you kind of feel like, hey, I'm almost just renting this thing because I download it. Maybe I delete it off my hard drive. Maybe I lose it or forget about it. Now that you can just either on your iPad or on an Apple TV, go into a whole collection of movies you've previously purchased to just get them right back is pretty cool. So it's still not moving fast as I would like to see it, but again, it's another step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think the quality is definitely there. We just need to wait for more titles to support 1080p. The new version supports 1080p. Like we said, it's available March 16th. As for the iPad 2 or the second generation iPad, it actually received a software update the same day to bring it up to speed with the new Apple TV, which will have a new revised interface. And Netflix, which is one of the best ways, best implementations of that service on the Apple TV, they announced that you will now be able to sign up for a Netflix account right within the Apple TV interface and actually link it to your Apple ID to charge you for that $8 a month.
Which that in itself is huge. I wonder if they're going to bring that over to the iPhone and the iPad, because I think there's a lot of people who either have balances in iTunes from gift cards and things like that, or just maybe are more comfortable with Apple having their credit card, as we've discussed in the past, with subscriptions. I don't know if Apple's still just taking their 30% cut, or if they have a special deal with Netflix. But again, I thought when you have these big keynotes, obviously there's more bigger and exciting things, but little things like that get dropped and sort of get don't get a lot of attention. But I think it's pretty huge that Netflix, you can just subscribe from right in the Apple TV. And that streamlined interface also really shows off some of the other channels. You can get NBA League Pass, you can get MLB at Bat. I think that's a little hint towards what the future of the Apple TV is going to look like, that these different stations and these different premium content providers can provide an app right within the TV and either provide their content for free or be able to charge you a subscription right in the app.
Yeah, I also noticed that within the new interface, there's now Genius recommendations. Everything looks really cool. I'm wondering if they're going to use this new interface to somehow, you know, train us for possibly, you know, the rumored iTV.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that. It's one of those things that I still can't believe Apple wants to get into the physical TV market. And when you read what Steve Jobs said in the biography, I'm wondering if some people have misunderstood this rumor. I wonder if Apple is more concerned about the content and the way you access the content than they are the actual physical device. And maybe there won't be an Apple television set, or maybe even if there is, that's not going to be their main emphasis. If you remember Steve Jobs at All Things D several years ago, when he first was mentioning it, he said it's so hard to make these deals and it shouldn't be, but it's a long, slow process. So when he said in the Isaacson biography, "I've nailed it," I wonder if he was referring more to the way the business model for getting us the shows we want, or if he meant to physical TV. I guess we'll have to wait to see there, but I still think this Apple TV is a sleeper. I think it's Apple slowly kind of getting the deals in place, and they plan on this being a major component in a few years.
Yeah, right at the end of the keynote, if we're going to spoil it for someone, basically Tim says, you know, we still have more innovation to come this year. So hinting at, you know, I mean, obviously there's going to be a new iPhone probably in the fall and, you know, this so-called rumored TV. Now in regards to Steve Jobs saying that he nailed it, there was a follow-up interview that Walter Isaacson had. I think it was a foreign language interview where he mentioned that he actually omitted some extra information about the plans of the Apple television from the book because he felt that it wouldn't have done Apple any good since they haven't even come out with a product yet. So it sounds like Walter has, you know, some extra information that, you know, he didn't tell us in the book. So it'll be interesting to see what comes up from this, if anything.
Yeah, I like Walter Isaacson. I enjoyed the book. but there's no doubt he's already hinting towards a kind of like a sequel or an expanded version. So I think there probably is things he left out, and he may have done it partly out of respect for Apple, but I also think he's sowing the seeds for that next book. As much as Steve Jobs opened up, as much as it must really change a person's thinking when they're looking at death that closely, I don't think Steve Jobs is going to say to somebody who's writing a book or in the press, give him really the important details of that. So I'm somewhat skeptical of that, but that's going to be a topic on future episodes over and over again, because this rumor isn't going away, and we'll just keep following it and keep discussing it. And now we'll get back to the rest of the keynote.
Okay. So moving back onto the iPad, they talked about how there are 15.4 million iPad units sold last quarter, more iPads sold last quarter than basically than what a PC manufacturer sold for their entire line, which is incredible. 200,000 plus native iPad apps. So once again, you know, just the regular iPad stats. Now let's move on to the star of the show, which is when Phil Schiller came on stage and he introduced the new iPad. Okay. Basically this new iPad, he talked about how, you know, boom, right off the bat, Retina display with a resolution of 2048 by 1536, which is incredible. 3 million pixels into a 9.7 inch display. He also mentioned that it would have an EyeSight camera, which would have the same optics as the iPhone 4S. This is for the back of the camera. Would be able to shoot 5-megapixel pictures, which, you know, is different because the iPhone 4S actually shoots 8 megapixels. Also, he introduced that it would have 1080p video recording, Siri dictation, which is pretty interesting, just the dictation part without actual Siri support. And the big one that was, you know, that was pretty much a guarantee, 4G LTE. Also, I'm just going to sum up this quickly and then we talk about it a bit more. Same prices and capacities, which was pretty awesome. iPad 2 drops down to $399. March 16th, which it would be available, which would just be over in a week. Pre-orders that same day, again, incredible. And they said a week later, they would roll out the iPad to 25 more countries. They said it's the fastest rollout ever for any Apple product they've ever had. Those Foxconn workers must be working overtime right now. That's all I have to say. Sorry, bad joke. It's the truth, though.
Yeah, the big news is obviously the Retina display. It blew our minds when it came to the iPhone 4. I think when, if you went back to that podcast, I think when Steve Jobs introduced the Retina display, we were interested in it, thought it sounded cool, but it was one of those things that you just absolutely had to see for yourself. I think it was interesting that Phil Schiller instantly, I think that was the first or second sentence out of his mouth, that this thing is impressive on paper, but you just have to see it. He made a joke about that the projector behind him didn't have as many pixels as the Retina display, so yeah, that they would actually have to scale everything down to try to even give you an approximation. Obviously, the improved camera is interesting because the iPad 2 now has such terrible cameras. I don't think most people use their iPad for a camera, but now that it has it in there and so many more people have it, maybe it's one of those things that in a couple years you're going to see people walking around taking pictures with their iPad and we won't think anything of it. But right now it still looks a little weird. I'm not surprised at all about the prices or the capacities. That's what I was assuming. I didn't buy any of those rumors. Apple, that's just not how they do it. I personally think if the Retina display was so costly to make that it involved a higher price, they would have put it off for longer. I just can't see them messing with the price. And as you predicted, it not only is available in Canada from day one, it's in 10 or 12 other countries on day one, and then up to 40 something within a few weeks. So maybe the rumors were true that they've been manufacturing this thing in bulk since November, and hopefully they can meet the demand.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great for Canada to be part of the original first rollout, which is awesome. You know, when it came to the LTE version of the iPad, basically this is the iPad that has the most radio bands of any device ever shipped. It's a crazy stat. It has, you know, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, all of those other bands. Pretty incredible. They did mention Rogers, TELUS, and Bell right on the right in the keynote as the carriers that would support LTE. It's incredible, the Retina display resolution, how they compared it to, you know, it has a higher resolution than your HD TV in your hand. It's just so funny. I mean, even with some of those demos for some of the games, it just didn't look the same at watching the keynote. I definitely think, you know, they have been building this new iPad for the longest time, because a day after the keynote, with people pre-ordering yesterday and Apple servers getting hammered, there's still stock available today. And, you know, clearly they have plans to just churn these things out 24 hours a day like they always do. And this will probably set, you know, we'll probably hear on Monday or Tuesday, a record amount of iPads sold over the weekend. This is something that Apple typically does. They'll release some press release, you know, fastest, you know, the most pre-orders ever for the iPad, set a new record, crazy like that.
It is going to be a scary number, because I think the first iPad sold 1 million or 2 in its first so many days, and everybody was blown away that the iPhone 4S sold 4 million over the weekend. It was only available in the US or possibly a few other countries. It wasn't as big a rollout. And within hours of the iPhone 4S going on sale, every Apple store that it was on sale on, it was already delayed several weeks. So as you said, the fact that most of the stores that I've checked still showing dates either the same day or a few days later, unless the demand is way smaller, which I doubt, means that they have really ramped up production. And I think they're going to drop a huge number on us.
Yeah, so we definitely expect that for the next week. Also during the keynote, they talked about some pretty interesting updates to software. For GarageBand and iMovie, they introduced a few significant updates. GarageBand, you can have jam session, which you can actually allow a whole bunch of other iOS devices jam at the same time with the software. Also, they announced smart strings and also iCloud support. In iMovie, you can now make movie trailers, which was pretty fun when they introduced that for the Mac version of iMovie. And you can also import tracks from GarageBand. As for iWork, it now has Retina graphics, improved iCloud support. They also updated a whole bunch of other Apple applications, such as Remote. You name all those, Find My Friends, just some minor updates for iOS 5.1. Of course, you know, this is something that, you know, I completely agreed with when I read about it on Daring Fireball, that we would see iPhoto for iOS. I mean, people didn't really talk about this much, but hey, it certainly came out. And I actually finished watching the keynote just prior to the podcast, and the demo of that app just looks incredible.
Yeah. Just to go backwards for a quick second before we get into the software, because there's quite a bit to cover there. We should also point out that despite the fact that it's a Retina display, quad-core graphics, and the LTE and some of the other various features, they're still promising the 10 hours of battery life and the 9 on LTE, which, as we kind of speculated last week, both of us kind of agreed that we'd like to see a Retina display and possibly LTE, but we didn't want the battery to suffer. So I thought that was, again, something that glossed over pretty quickly, but that is big. And the one thing that Apple didn't promote, but you could tell by looking at the specs, that they had to almost double the size of the battery to keep up with those batteries. So that tells you how much more power a Retina display takes and how inefficient LTE still is, that they had to pretty much double the battery life from the iPad 2 just to give the same amount of hours. So I think that was worth touching on. Hopefully we're going to still have the same battery, which I'm glad. And then the one other thing we kind of glossed over is it's interesting that they brought Siri-like dictation, but didn't bring Siri over. And I'm just going to speculate. My guess is that internally, the iPad 3 or the third iPad has everything that it needs to do Siri. They just can't keep up with the demand even on the iPhone. So my guess is you will see Siri on the iPad in a future update.
Yeah, I think the battery life is something that we certainly need to touch on. I mean, it really, this is something that I just, you know, couldn't really fathom, a Retina display and LTE and having the same battery life. I mean, those engineers must have been chained to their desks or something to make iOS that much more efficient and, like you said, also increase the battery. But that's truly remarkable. You hear about, you know, all these battery nightmares with Android phones running LTE, but now the iPad has the same battery life, and the thickness of the new iPad isn't actually that much thicker. It's just like, what, a millimeter difference?
Yeah, and I'm sure that is partly just to squeak all this stuff in. But yeah, I guess that's another thing we did gloss over. It's virtually identical form factor. So most cases, including the smart cover, are going to work. Most of your accessories are going to work just fine, which is another nice thing for consumers.
Yeah, it's 0.6 millimeters thicker, so less than a millimeter.
Right. So unless you have the snuggest fitting case ever made, most accessories are still going to probably work just perfectly.
And about 49 grams heavier, probably due to the radio antennas. It could be the Retina display, even, you know, the battery. So pretty incredible stuff. Also, let's talk about how the A5 chip is what came out in the iPad 2 is a quad core. I'm sorry, is a dual core chip. Now, we first heard rumors of A5X as, you know, some sort of, you know, early demo chip, whatever. And then people started saying it would not be quad core. And it turns out that's the case. The A5X is just sort of a beefed up chip to allow for, quote, quad core graphics. But technically, it's not a quad core chip. But it, you know, it makes sense in terms of being able to support that gorgeous Retina display.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm surprised that Apple even mentions the chip name, but because it seems like they started mentioning the chip name when they bought that company and they started, it's almost like an internal chip. They helped design it and then it's fabbed by that company they bought. So it seems like they want to take pride in that from that standpoint. But otherwise, as we've said over and over on the show, Apple doesn't care about specs. I predicted it wouldn't be a quad core just because, again, I didn't think it was necessary. You only have limited apps even now fully taking advantage of dual core. So the quad core graphics, they were very specific to make it sound like the graphics were going to be significant. And I know even just in the day it's been since announcing it, several game publishers have kind of done their own blog posts about how much of a difference that quad core graphics can make in what they're able to do. So not only are you going to get a beautiful display for text, which to me is the key to the Retina display, the just the level of detail in the text, you're going to very shortly see another big jump in the terms of graphics when it comes to games.
Yeah. I mean, the demo of this game didn't really do much. Couldn't really experience it because it was, you know, it didn't even matter because the resolution of the projector didn't even match the resolution of the iPad. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, that it's pretty incredible. Also, one thing that we should also talk about here is the EyeSight camera. People were kind of up in arms about how the EyeSight camera is only a 5-megapixel shooter as opposed to an 8-megapixel shooter that is on the current 4S.
Yeah, I don't think that's a big deal. The current camera is less than a pixel and nobody cared that much. Again, it's now a bonus to, if you're buying this product, to have a pretty decent camera and a good video camera, but it's not really the reason you're buying an iPad. So again, we've speculated about this in the past. I'm not sure if why Apple tends to keep their premium camera in the iPhone, if it's intentional to still try to say, hey, if you're serious about photography, go to our very latest phone, or if it's just a pricing issue where, because that's a premium product, you always see the iPad and the iPod Touch lagging behind a little bit. But I think that the 1080p video recording, the lens and optics from the iPhone 4S, the image stabilization, which they showed off, I think now it makes the camera on the iPad as good as you're going to need for what you plan to do with it. Again, I don't see people walking around. You're out with your family walking through a zoo. I can't see you wrapping it around your neck and using it as your main camera. It's something that when you just want to grab something quickly and you're already using it, I think it's good for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. One other feature that we should mention is that the new iPad is also going to have a personal hotspot as a feature to allow you to share your high-speed data plan on your iPad up to 5 devices. Now, this depends on carrier support, but personal hotspot on the iPad is pretty amazing, pretty neat feature. It just will have to come down to your data plan.
Yeah, it's a feature that most people probably aren't going to care or use, but I guarantee you there was a small portion of the audience who probably just about cheered when that came out, because if you currently don't have a smartphone data plan, or maybe you're using a dumb phone or a feature phone, but you have an iPad, now this gives you the opportunity to get a pretty awesome fast 5 gigabytes a month for a fairly reasonable price. In Canada here, I think it's going to be 5 gigs for $35. So now to be able to just quickly share that LTE connection with a laptop or your iPhone or your iPod Touch, like you said, it's a really nice feature for people.
All right, moving on. Next up, we're going to talk about we talked about iPhoto for iOS.
We didn't really go
into it though. Did you check it out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, Apple updated all their apps. So you probably had a lot of updating to do. I liked what they did. I think the trailers was a neat thing for iMovie. I haven't tried it yet, but that's cool. I also think it's great that you can import tracks from GarageBand. Again, it's worth pointing out that in this software section of the keynote, they really emphasize these features, and Bill Schiller went out of his way to at one point to say, don't let anybody ever tell you that you can't create with the iPad. If you remember when the first iPad came out, that was the big knock against it, that it was this beautiful device for consumption, but it wasn't something you could use to create content. And Apple obviously didn't like that and are very serious about showing that it is. So I like that all these Apple apps are getting more fully featured. They don't just throw these out. It's kind of amazing that you buy an app like GarageBand for $4.99 and they just keep improving it. They're making them easier to work together. And of course, Apple updated all their apps for Retina graphics, because it would be silly to ship this Retina display and have the Apple apps not look good. So that's impressive. And then as far as iPhoto goes, I've only been able to spend about 20 minutes with it. But once you wrap your mind around it, I think if you're used to photo editing in other apps, some of it may throw you off. It was funny that reading some of the blogs yesterday, it seemed like some of the big time photo editors were more lost than the people who are just grabbing it for the first time. They were saying it wasn't intuitive. And I think that's just because it's so different. But it has all the great photo management features you're used to from iPhoto. Finally makes it very easy to create photos on your iPad. Create albums to store different types of photos. It sorts things into events. It has this really new cool feature called journals, where you can kind of add dates and weather. And you should watch the keynote. As Gary mentioned, really great demo for iPhoto. But the actual multi-touch editing and brushes are pretty amazing. You can, I was taking an old family portrait thing from like the 50s where just because of the technology back then, three or four of the people, their faces were really sharp. And one of the children in the photograph, their face was really sort of not sharp as the other areas. And you can just hit this one button to mask the outline. And then you can do the sharpen tool. And it has this neat feature where you can say show brushes. And then it actually turns the brush strokes red. And you can just lightly go with your finger. If you press more and press more often, it gets darker and darker. And I've just never been able to so easily sharpen one part of a photograph. It's another example that I've mentioned on the podcast before, where at first it was neat to have these apps on the iPad. It would just be enough to say, oh, iPhoto's on the iPad. How cool. Now we're seeing it go to another level where there's certain things that make more sense to do on an iPad. It is actually easier to brush with your finger on a photo and more natural than trying to manipulate that with a mouse on your computer. So it's showing this whole move where, again, it's no longer a gimmick. This device is actually better for certain type of tasks.
Yeah. I mean, in the demo itself, in the keynote, it's just the smallest number of taps needed to improve your photo. It was pretty neat. One of the coolest parts I thought were was a photo journals feature where you can automatically share it via iCloud, and you can make these pretty cool photo journals. I liked how you could drag in the widgets. It could it'll research the temperature of the place you went based on the date and time of your photos, which is awesome. Added notes, drag in calendars and stuff. This is just for $4.99, and the app is also for the iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. Not to be a jerk, but again, it's one of those things where as an Apple user, we can kind of make fun of some of the other devices, because you do not see an app like iPhoto anywhere else. You're not going to see something like that on Android. It's laughable to even think that RIM could support anything like that. And even you don't see anything like this on a PC. It's that innovative an app. It's amazing what Apple's doing. And again, I think it's more about showing off what the iPad can do and throwing down the gauntlet to other app developers saying, hey, we love what you're doing so far, but we can, and you can do more than a 99-cent 3-screen app. This thing can do some major things. And an iPhoto, again, for $4.99, the journals, the effects, the brushes just blow my mind. I thought they look cool on the demo, and then I tried out a few, and it's almost so easy that it was almost if you've used Photoshop in the past, these type of things have always been possible, but they're so difficult. You got to create all these layers and try to mask things, and it's like you're pressing your finger, and then you're like, holy crap, I can't remember what other app. I think it was GarageBand. I said the same thing. It's just, and again, even with Siri, you used to think when Apple did a demo was like, oh, here's this cool thing they did. But in real life, it's not going to be that cool. And I find lately on these demos on stage, they're so cool on stage. And then when you actually use it yourself, you're like, holy crap, this thing is as cool as they made it look. They didn't just take this one isolated incident to make it look cool. You can really do phenomenal things with these photos. So I think people who have no interest in correcting their photos, just to be able to make these photo libraries quickly share to Flickr and Facebook and Twitter, and that these journals will be great. But if you're someone who wants to do something a little more serious with your photos, don't let the iPhoto cute little name from iLife in the past fool you. This thing is capable of some pretty powerful things.
Yeah. The iPad has finally come along to a part, part in its life where you can create things now. And they emphasize that, don't let anyone not tell you that you can't create with your iPad. So I thought that was pretty neat. Anything else we should touch on? During the end of the keynote, there's a little wrap up. Tim Cook was on stage, said only Apple could deliver this kind of innovation in such a beautiful, integrated, and easy to use way. It's what we love to do. It's what we stand for. Okay. He says, we're just getting started. So we can only imagine what else is coming. for the rest of 2012. What did you think about the keynote after watching it?
Well, right before I get to the wrap up, because I think that was pretty significant, the last thing I want to say about software, and I haven't really heard anybody else specifically point this out, but I think it is something pretty interesting. This is the first time that I can remember in a long time that Apple released an update to their product that the only thing added to the product is the hardware. If you have an iPad 2 right now, you are not left out of anything. The 5.1 update, you get all the new features. GarageBand, iPhoto, all these new apps still work. Most of them work, I think, with the iPad 1. I think there's just a couple features in each that don't work with the iPad 1. So if you're thinking about upgrading, or I would say this, if you have an iPad 2 right now and you don't really want to upgrade, just don't go to the store or look at anybody's Retina display, because if you don't see it.
Yes.
And I'll say, even for myself, as cool as the Retina display is, as cool as the Retina display was on the iPhone, as awesome as Siri seemed, the thing that always excites me about these keynotes is the new software. So whenever it's less tempting in some ways to buy the new device, when, like I said, this is the first time I remember that really everything is available for everyone. So nobody got left behind. So the Retina display, fantastic. If you're upgrading for that reason, it's absolutely going to be worth the wait. If you are just getting your first iPad, then you're going to be spoiled and you won't even fully recognize how much of a leap forward it is. But I did think it was kind of interesting that all the software features and new software, Apple's fully supporting the old devices.
Yeah. Going back here to the cameras, it's interesting how now Apple is referring to the camera now as an eyesight camera, which is taking the name from the camera that's been on their Macs for the longest time. So I know they've changed some of the wording on the website, even for the iPhone, and they're referring to the camera on the iPhone as the eyesight camera.
That's an interesting change. The eyesight camera used to be the front-facing camera on the iMac and the MacBook. So
that
now
external thing that first started out as that little...
This first, yeah, it did.
The radar gun looking.
Yeah, which at the time was the coolest looking webcam, but kind of ridiculous now looking back at it. Yeah, so I think it's interesting now that they're kind of wanting to brand their higher-end rear cameras as eyesight. They've changed the front-facing cameras to FaceTime cameras on all the different devices. So again, I think that's just a change in the guard. It's making these devices closer together. Mountain Lion, we've seen some things renamed. I think it's an effort to make the ecosystem even cleaner and simpler. If you're an iMac user and you're jumping out to buy an iPad, it's going to be a comfortable transition. If you're the other way around and you've bought an iPad and then you're considering your next desktop, then the iMac is that perfect perfect way to segue into that. So they're just kind of cleaning up the line. Now to go back, we're a little chaotic today in the podcast. Every time you move on, I think of something from the past one. But now back to what you said about the recap. I thought that quote was really significant, that only Apple could deliver this kind of innovation in such a beautiful, integrated, and easy-to-use way. It's what we love to do. And then there was the slightest bit of pause and the extra emphasis. The part that Apple doesn't really add was that it's what we stand for. To me, that was like Tim Cook really trying to say, again, to me, that's a nod to Steve Jobs without mentioning his name. That's any of you doubters out there, anybody who thinks that because we've lost Steve, we're losing our way or we're losing any of our vision. Absolutely not. It doesn't matter that we've gone from plucky little underdog to the biggest company in the world. We're still a company that's not driven by profits, not driven by stock shares, cash in the bank, that we're an idealistic company. We believe in this, and this is exactly what we stand for. And I thought that he made a pretty big statement there that you wouldn't normally expect necessarily at the end of these keynotes.
Yeah, pretty powerful stuff. Basically, like you said, you know, don't doubt us. We're in full control. You know, Steve's not here anymore, but you know, they're still going to go forward. Here's something interesting that was a huge debate. The naming of the iPad, they just introduced it as the new iPad. And I believe you were one of the early psychics out there, shall we say, that you said they would just drop the numbers or drop the lettering or the names and just call it iPad.
Yeah, I'm not going to go as far to say I predicted it, because it's not like last week I just said it's absolutely going to be this. But I have said three or four different times on the podcast that I think in the near future they would drop these weird naming conventions. And as you can see with this iPad, it makes sense from the larger standpoint, but it is awkward right now. It is weird for a customer to walk into a store and say, "Can I have the iPad?" "Yep." "Or did you want the iPad too?" But it's actually older than the iPad. Like it's going to be a little awkward at first, but to me, it makes sense for a couple key reasons. First of all, is I think it has a little bit to do with what I said about all the software still working for the iPad 2. I don't think Apple's comfortable with selling you a product. They've never got in that game of we're trying to sell you something for the sake of selling it. They want you in the ecosystem. Of course, they want to sell more. But I don't think the name helps. I think the name can just confuse and kind of intimidate outsiders. And for the real geeks, we're not going to not buy the new product as soon as it comes out because it doesn't have some new name. We're sucked in by the Retina display. We're sucked in by the smallest of any improvement. But the regular customer, I don't think Apple wants the situation where this Christmas it comes time to buy your family member or by yourself or whatever it is, it's 6 to 7 to 8 months away from when it was announced. I don't think Apple wants the regular consumer thinking, "Oh, well, is there now going to be an iPad 4? It's just go buy an iPad. It's always going to be this great product with minor improvements." The other thing I think it opens up is it takes any pressure off Apple as far as updating this goes. So you might see, I wouldn't be shocked because of this name change. I think it signals something important. I would now not be shocked if there was a new iPad 3 months from now, and I wouldn't be shocked if there wasn't a new iPad for almost 2 years from now. It takes off that pressure where it's now we're comfortable with the form factor, we're comfortable with how this works, we're going to update it when it makes sense to update it and not to try to just get into some artificial yearly cycle and try to go along with the gimmicks of these other companies where it's, oh, it's the 4S 319 because we have this. Apple's never cared about that stuff. Even Steve Jobs in his biography said, Apple isn't a hardware or a software company. It's both. To make great software, you also have to make the hardware. And Apple has always wanted to make a beautiful piece of hardware that had good quality, but Apple's never wanted to be in the game where it's here's the latest thing and it's a spec. If you look at these other tablets, other laptops, they literally have new models with ridiculous names every couple months. And now I think Apple's saying, we have the iPad, we have the iMac, we have the MacBook, and that's all you need to worry about. And I wouldn't be surprised if the iPhone follows suit. It's, again, I won't say I predicted it because I wasn't that bold, but this is what I was expecting. And it happened maybe a little sooner than I thought, but I think it does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, you know, you think about the time when, you know, back then iPods, they reached a certain point where, you know, you didn't really expect an update. And if one was coming, great. But if not, you're still going to enjoy it. You look at the MacBooks out there. I mean, people are still waiting for a refresh. Even the original MacBook Air, I mean, the next refresh for that took quite a bit. And even for the iPhone, I mean, I've said many times before, I don't actually need a new iPhone. But if one comes out, I'm going to get it. But do I really need it? Like, you know, has this iPhone reached a point where, you know, all of these features are just, they meet my needs? Yes. Do I need the latest one? Probably no. But is it fun to get it? Of course. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to just keep on coming out with a new phone. But yes, you know, people want to see that innovation. People want to see those upgrades. I think at the period we are right now with so many smartphones and tablets and all this stuff, I mean, you know, consumers, they get excited for the latest and the newest, but it's now down to the apps. It's now down to what can this tablet or this ecosystem provide for me more so than the other one. And on top of that, I mean, if you already have an existing iPhone, you already know how to use your tablet. I mean, some of the Android tablets are catching up and they're also using the same interface as the phones. But I mean, every time I pick up an Android phone or tablet for that matter, I am just like, whoa, man, this is information overload. There's just so many, like, it's too much on the screen. It just doesn't make sense.
And is just as easily as I can make the argument that the iPhone will drop the number, you could kind of make just as easily an argument that it wouldn't. The thing that made the iPod different is computers and kind of consumer electronic gadgets have always been marketed a little differently. So I think with the iPod, cynically, Apple did want to sell you one every couple of years. So switching colors and things like that was part of that product cycle where you kind of have to have the newest and latest thing. And when you were walking around town, if you didn't have the right color blue, it was obvious that you had the older iPod. But at the same time, because it was such a new product, when you could double the capacity or you could add major new features about the way you could navigate those songs or the way do different things, it was such an early product that it made sense to kind of dramatically be changing it every year. Maybe we'll continue to see that for many more years with the phone because there's so much more that can be done with it. But for something to me like the iPad, it's even though it's still new, it's pretty mature product. It's amazing what it can do. And I'd love to give the person credit, but I don't remember. I should have had it. Somebody in the demo room yesterday was interviewing Phil Schiller and asked why there was no changes to the hardware. And he said, because it's perfect the way it is. And that's where it is. That's where you see the MacBook hasn't changed in years. They're not Apple. They'll run with the same hardware look for years and years and years if they feel like they've nailed it. If the hardware's compromised in any way, like the first iPad was pretty great, but it was a little thick. It was a little uncomfortable with the way you held it. So it had room for improvement. Right now, the hardware doesn't really have room for improvement. Even trying to speculate what the next iPad would be right now. What, looking at this new iPad, what can you look at it and say, this thing is missing? It's really not missing anything. So why set the false idea that in the next 6 months to a year, we have to just add something for the sake of adding it. By getting rid of that naming convention, now it's if they want to go a year and a half and the next iPad is just an improved processor and more RAM to keep up with the software, then they can do that with very little fanfare. The other issue is, I was thinking, again, this isn't really a prediction, but if Apple is going to consider different screen sizes, then this name also makes sense. Maybe this opens up the door for this fall for there to be a 12-inch iPad and an 8-inch iPad. Maybe it'll become more like an iPad. I mean, more like a MacBook Air, where it's here's what this thing's general look is, here's what it's capable of, but here we are offering it in two or three different screen sizes for various different types of people and how they want to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was senior fortune writer Miguel Helft. He was at the event and he sent out a couple tweets that we wrote about over at iPad in Canada. Basically, he asked Phil Schiller, he said, hey Phil, I mean, why the name new iPad and not iPad 3 or iPad HD, et cetera? Phil's answer, we don't like to be predictable, right? Also, you know, he asked about why the iPad 2 had the same design and why the body stayed the same. Like you said, Phil's answer, it was perfect, so why change it? I mean, eventually, that information was put into a further in-depth Wall Street Journal article. And there's also a little video posted of Miguel and Adam Leshinsky, who is the author of the Inside Apple book, which I started reading. I can't believe anything in that book, by the way, for those people who have started reading it. You take a look at the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S, the design is identical. I mean, it's what's worked. It's a super thin design, and it's selling. They can't keep up with demand with the iPhone here as well. I mean, it's just selling like hotcakes.
Yeah, I think both of his answers were interesting. I think the second one was more right to the point. I think the first one, he was being a little cheeky, a little sarcastic on purpose. But at the same time, I think there was a deeper truth in that. If you remember a few years ago, Apple upset a lot of people and it was a disappointment, but they pulled out of Macworld and they basically admitted, and the more in-depth reporting showed that they didn't want to be put on other people's schedules. So I think, again, this name takes off some of the heat of when these things get updated. I think Apple, again, is trying to signal that the iPad isn't the iPhone. It's not a consumer electronics gadget. It's a legitimate alternative to a computer. So we want it to sit alongside our MacBook and our iMac as a device that will update when it makes sense. But if you're ready to buy one, buy one. You don't have to be worried about the 4, 4S, the X3, 9 HD. It's the iPad, and it'll be here for you, ready to do what it does.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, that was pretty much it for the keynote. Other than that, I mean, it's now just the new iPad. So when you are talking to friends about iPads, and you know, now when you see someone else with an iPad, it's no longer sort of, oh, which iPad do you have? You can just say, oh, I have an iPad. It's the newer iPad or the third gen iPad. I mean, when you order the iPad, Apple now refers to it as a third generation iPad. So we're moving into that, you know, iPod, the original sort of iPod naming scheme, where they would just refer to it as, you know, the first or second generation iPod. So, but other than that, it was a pretty neat keynote. I mean, they were on top of it. Everything went well. And yeah, I mean, I just can't wait to get my hands on that Retina display on the iPad. That's going to be really something.
Yeah, I'll probably end up with it too. As I mentioned to you before the show, I'm really trying to talk myself out of it, trying to say, hey, it does all these other things, but the Retina display is pretty tempting. So I will probably end up getting it. Like you, I thought it was a lot of stuff to cover. It was an interesting keynote from a lot of standpoints. Just like the iPhone 4S, if you just are looking at it very quickly and superficially, it may look like a minor update. But again, with the software and the new naming, it's significant move forward for Apple. And then I just thought the entire tone of the keynote, it was fun to watch. The guys seemed to be having a good time, and it will never have the excitement or the energy ever again without Steve Jobs. That's just inevitable. The man was a master at it, but they do a pretty good job. They were channeling Steve Jobs as much as they could. They stuck with his playbook exactly. There was a couple times when Tim Cook was standing to the side and those far shots, you kind of almost look like Steve. The way they shoot it was the same, the overall look of it. And I just found that all the guys really just were really comfortable. I found Phil Schiller maybe even more kind of laughing and joking than normal. Joked a couple times about, I can't wait to get one of these, when obviously he's had one for a while. I just found the whole mood of the keynote was kind of back to Apple's normal standards, that they've kind of put the sadness part behind it, and now they're willing to embrace the future. They're going to stick with Steve's playbook, but in other little ways, slowly kind of add their own personality, including that last line where when Tim Cook said, we're just getting started. Steve Jobs would say things like that about a specific product, like this, here's the new iPad and we're just getting started. We're really excited what we can do with this iPad, but he never really used it as a way to hint to the next thing. So now the speculation can begin. Does that mean that there's going to be this Apple TV set? If it's not the Apple TV set, can he really be pumping just another iPhone and a MacBook Air refresh? Or is there something completely that nobody sees? Mountain Lion, nobody saw that coming. Could Apple possibly have another game-changing product that nobody even is thinking about right now?
Yeah, I'm hoping for some sort of TV change up. I mean, being able to subscribe to channels as an app itself and just canceling cable, that would be something that everyone would love to have. But right now, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime really soon.
Yeah, it's happening just at a very slow snail's pace, but we get a little closer each time.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks again, everyone, for listening to the iPhone podcast. Please rate us on iTunes. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and Justin is at twitter.com/JustinLouie. Once again, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time.